roads full of houses, never home. Church full of singing, out of tune. Everyone's gone to the moon.
Welcome into the KSRO Pizza Parlor today. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash.
It's good to see you.
And who's this guy wrapped in a red and white checkered tablecloth?
Really?
It's the pizza man.
Yes, it is.
It is. Peter Reinhardt.
But also the great bread man, too, at the same time. But pizza's been your passion for such a long time, hasn't
it? Yeah, I think that most people love pizza, and I've always loved it from childhood, so I finally got a chance to write about it, which is kind of cool. And because bread and pizza are so related, it was kind of like the next step.
Let me just read what Peter wrote about himself. He said, Peter Reinhardt is widely acknowledged as one of the world's leading authorities on bread. It's true. He's very honest.
Did he write that?
He wrote that about himself. It said he's the author of 12 books, including the James Beard and IACP award-winning The Bread Baker's Apprentice, as well as American Pie, My Search for the Perfect Pizza. So he's not new to the pizza game. For those of you that don't know Brother Peter Reinhardt, he founded a wonderful cafe in Forestville, California, here in Sonoma County.
So why did you move away?
I know, it was hard. It was hard to and was a, try to move leading away.
So can I read something which I thought was really good? You know, the people who write blurbs,
yes,
you know, for the beginning of this. And I loved what Daniel Young said about you, which was really great. No pizza pan is as deep as baking guru Peter Reinhardt.
The book is called Perfect Pan Pizza. That's a great bunch of alliteration that you've done. Perfect Pan Pizza, square pies to make at home from Roman, Sicilian, and Detroit, or Detroit, as my daughter-in-law says, who's from Detroit. Yeah. And when I say Detroit, she goes, to grandma pies, we'll find out what that is, and focaccia. So congratulations. You talked about writing this book a year ago when you were last visiting.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And it was. You know, we've just done the photography for it, actually, I think, when I saw you. And then, you know, it takes months and months for a book to finally come out, you know, because you go through a lot of editing and review, and then it happens. And it just came out a few weeks ago.
So can I ask you, what is pan pizza? Because you've also been a... What, could you just kind of sketch out the world of pizza?
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, in context of this book, any pizza that is baked in a pan instead of directly on the hearth, like a Neapolitan pizza, wood-fired pizza. Neapolitan even is a misunderstood term because it's supposed to refer to Naples, which is the heart and soul of wood-fired pizza. But when pizza came to these shores about 125 years ago in New York and New Haven, they didn't have wood-fired ovens in New York then, but they had coal-fired ovens. But they made pizzas similar to what they remembered from the old country. And they were round, and they had sauce and cheese, but they were fired with coal. And then, of course, later on, there was gas and electric. But they always referred to their pizzas as Neapolitan because it was in the style of Naples. So but nowadays, Neapolitan has come back to mean specifically wood-fired pizzas baked like at 700 or 800 degrees in about 2 minutes. And then the what we now think of as a New York-style pizza or an East Coast pizza is kind of neo-Neapolitan, this New World Neapolitan.
So what about thin crust? So what you're talking about in this book are thick crust.
For the most part. For the most part, yeah. And it doesn't have to be that way, but it very often turns out to be that way. Because when you can put dough in a pan, it can rise. First of all, normally pizza goes right in the oven after it's been shaped, so it just rises a little bit. But when you can put dough in a pan and let it rise, like you would with focaccia, for instance, typically a couple of hours of rising, it's really like a 1 inch thick to 1 1/4 inch. If you get focaccia in a restaurant where it's like 3 inches, it's an abomination. Really, it's like part of my mission in life is to redeem focaccia from the way it's been butchered by American restaurants and supermarkets because people think focaccia is just bread, thick bread with maybe a little Parmesan cheese on top. But focaccia really is a great category of pizza from northern Italy as opposed to the Naples southern Italian style. Focaccia is the pizza of Genoa and Liguria, and focaccia can be equally as great as what we think of as
maybe that answers the first line of the book, which you ask yourself, why this book and why now?
Why now?
Yeah.
Because, pan pizza is coming back. It's like for a long time, it was sort of the neighborhood pizzeria. A bakery would have a couple pans of pizza that they called pizza. And if they were from northern Italy, they'd say, oh, that looks like focaccia. Or if they're from Tuscany, they'd say, it looks like schiacciata. They all have all these different names. But really, what's pizza is just dough with something on it.
Yeah.
And for a long time, it was served even cold. You just go to the bakery and you ask for a piece of that, pizza in the pan. And it's already been baked and sitting there for a couple hours. And you take it home and you eat it on the way home.
So one of the places that you mentioned here, because I lived in North Beach for a number of years, was Liguria.
The Liguria Bakery, And they have really one of the few places in America where you can say, okay, now you go there and you get focaccia, then, you can leave a happy person and not like, what's the big deal? That's great stuff. And there's not too many places that do focaccia that well.
You're right on the mark with Square Pie Pizza. The Square Pie guys opened this past Tuesday in San Francisco, owners Danny Stoller and Mark Schechter. It's at 1077 Mission Street. Pretty remarkable, serving crispy-edged rectangular pizzas, which they've gotten an amazing following. They just installed a three-decker oven, and they have 10 pizza varieties, such as the classic pepperoni pie, which has cheddar cheese edge, shredded mozzarella, exactly 48 pieces of pavoni cupping pepperoni, and topped with Chris Bianco's tomato sauce.
That's right.
And then they also have an El Pugilista. Don't you like that?
Pugilista,
the fighter. That's in Spanish, right?
Oh.
And that has cheddar cheese edge, shredded mozzarella, Mexican chorizo, salsa roja, chopped white onion, tomato, pickled jalapenos, and topped with a cilantro lime crema. The Detroit style, which was developed, as we learned in Peter's book, also.
What did you call it? The Detroit style?
Yeah.
Detroit.
The
Detroit
style. Again. In Buddies in Detroit.
Buddies,
right. Has enjoyed a huge surge in popularity well beyond Michigan, and says co-owner Schechter, everybody in the pizza world is going crazy for Square.
That's right.
That's the quote.
So what makes, because you talk about this in the book, Chicago, for people who've been to Chicago and have had pizza, it's kind of thick crust.
It's a deep dish pizza.
Detroit is different.
It's a deep
pan. And how is it different?
Yeah. So the new book has no Chicago style pizza in it, because that almost warrants its own book. It's a different style.
Is that the next book?
I don't know, because there are a couple books that have done Chicago style deep dish pizza, and it's more of a pastry crust.
And may I just interrupt? In Peter's book, he says, I prefer Detroit style over Chicago.
I did say that.
But nobody knew about Detroit style.
Until a couple years ago.
I think the last time you were here, you talked about it, and it was complete. What?
It kind of broke out of Detroit suddenly. It's like, it's been penned up. I feel like it's like Stranger Things. It broke through the barrier, and the upside down is now happening. The Detroit style has been around since the 1940s. When this guy Gus Guerra was working in the auto industry, and he retired, and they used these blue steel pans to hold nuts and bolts and tools. And on his last day, I think this is what happened, he saw a big stack of them over there, and he said, hey, it's my last day. And he grabbed a stack of them and left with them. And a few weeks later, opened a bar and grill with his wife. And before they knew it, they said, hey, we got these pans. Why don't we make some pizza in it? And they figured out a way of doing it that became distinctive to them.
It was the transmission fluid.
They didn't have to oil it because it was all ready to go. And it became a style. And other places in Detroit opened. And so they didn't call it Detroit-style pizza. Either. They called it pizza. Or pan pizza, and not even Detroit. They call it a Detroit pizza.
But when you wrote American Pie, your first pizza book in 2004,
I didn't mention.
You didn't mention.
I did not, because I didn't even know it was a thing.
Yeah.
I lived in Detroit. I had pizza, but it wasn't it wasn't called anything special. But what happened was, I think, like a lot of food trends, chefs got a hold of it and said, "Hey, this is really good. This could probably work somewhere else." Like a Philly cheesesteak could work outside of Philly, even though it usually doesn't. Most people don't eat cheesesteaks that much like Philadelphians do, because they didn't grow up with it. And so there was some – it took years. It took into like 5 years ago before it started to pop up in other places, and some good versions. And little by little, it was kind of like hit critical mass. I noticed it at the pizza shows that I go to, like the Pizza Expo in Las Vegas, where you see emerging trends. And as a judge at one of the competitions, I would judge in the category that's called non-traditional, the traditional being the Neapolitan. And any other kind of like anything goes pizza would show up in this other category. And I was always looking for what are some of the new things that are going to happen. And there were a few Detroit-style pizzas, but they were just a few. And then all of a sudden, the next year, there were like twice as many. And it started to get traction. And I think what happened was when people realized how delicious they are, and they really are when they're well properly done, they're different from the kind of pizza that we think of as New York style or Neapolitan style, because the undercrust, the part that's on the pan, because the pan's well oiled, it gets this like wonderful, what do we call it, like a toasty, it's like the best hot buttered toast you ever had. And so you get the crunchy factor underneath on the undercrust. The side gets some, like you were describing, Steve, is the cheese that melts over the side of the pizza because it's in a tall pan and not just a regular sheet pan. It doesn't leave the pan and go into the oven. It stays on the side of the pizza, and it creates this little edge, a cheesy edge called the frico. And so the frico to a pizza is kind of like what that little ear on a baguette is.
And that's F-R-I-C-O, not F-R-E-A-K-O.
That's right. That's right. So, and it's actually not even a pizza term. It refers to a technique in Italian cooking with I think potatoes were the potato and cheese.
Yeah.
Were
like or little, just cheese.
Or just cheese, yeah. And so this creates its own sort of internal frico in this method. And then you get the wonderful cheesy top and the dough itself, which looks like it's going to be too much dough. It looks like it's going to be too bready, but it's so creamy, it's almost like custard. So you get all these different textures. And I think this the textural aspect, aside from the flavor, that makes it so special and why it's now kind of at the tipping point of pizzas.
So you, in the book, talk about also Roman-style pizza.
The next wave, the
which
next
is,
big thing.
Which is kind of the same.
Similar, well, why don't we take different. A break and come back and jump into Roman. A passionate pizza presentation by Peter. There's a lot of P's right there. Peter Reinhardt, his new book is Perfect Pan Pizza. It's just come out. And the reason Pizza's visiting us.
Peter's we just call him Pizza.
It's to sell books, obviously. And you're here in Sonoma County this week. You did a presentation last week in Petaluma at the Artisan Baking Center.
I did. We had a six-hour pan pizza class. Yeah, it was fun. We made a lot of pizza.
One of you will win an autographed copy of Peter's new book at the end of the show. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash, in the KSRO kitchen.
Rincon Valley hears KSRO on Crystal Clear FM at 103.5.
Come to the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, voted best farmers market in Sonoma County. You'll enjoy exploring all they have to offer. This summer's market is exploding with all its local bounty. Berries and fruit, summer squash, onions, and vine-ripe tomatoes. Get your vegetable starts and advice from master gardeners at the Saturday market. When it comes to choosing meat, discover the quality of local beef, pork, lamb, and freshly made sausages. Award-winning vendors and artisans offering everything from baked goods, olive oil, fermented foods, spices, and chocolate to hand-painted silk pieces. Enjoy a fruit smoothie, breakfast, or lunch from the variety of food vendors. Santa Rosa's Original Certified Farmers Market at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. Open year-round, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1. Thank you, Sonoma County, for voting them number one. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Hi, it's Jeff Davis of On the Wine Road once again to talk about Mercedes-Benz of Santa Rosa and Smothers European Volvo Cars. I've expressed my high opinion of these dealerships the last couple of years, so I thought this time I'll let the customers share their thoughts. These are from the internet. Christopher in Windsor stated,
"No strong arming, no high pressure, just relaxed competence. It really is what car buying should be."
Gabby in Rohnert Park wrote,
"This was the most painless experience ever. Such a relaxing and friendly environment."
And from Marcus in San Francisco,
"Honest and straightforward. Probably the first time I've ever left a dealership feeling like I got the car I wanted and the deal I wanted."
Smothers treats their customers the way we'd like to be treated. As a result, you'll receive respect and transparency from sales and service. A truly refreshing car buying experience. Smothers European Volvo Cars and Mercedes-Benz of Santa Rosa. A family-owned business since 1982. 2881 Corby Avenue.
wisely doing what's best for our students and communities. That's State Senator Mike McGuire, standing up for our neighborhood public schools when he voted for AB 1505 and AB 1507. Two important bills that add more local control and increased accountability over charter schools and how they spend taxpayer money. So next time you see him, please thank Senator McGuire for putting kids before profits and doing the right thing for our neighborhood schools, teachers, and parents. Paid for by the California Teachers Association.
Hi, I'm Vanessa with PG&E. 811 is a free service to keep our communities safe. Before you do any digging, PG&E will mark your gas and electric lines so you don't hit them. Call 811 before you dig. To learn more, visit pge.com/safety.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore. Bells will ring, ting-a-ling-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling, and you'll sing Vita Bella. Hearts will play, tippy-tippy-tay.
In the KS Ardo Kitchen, Steve Garner, along with fellow pizza lover Chef John Ash and Professor Pizza, Peter Reinhardt, who has written Perfect Pan Pizza. This is his 12th book, his second on pizza pie, right?
Correct.
Now, you ask about Roman pizza.
Because you're so good at doing this. It's like there are these nuances around the world of pizza. So there's Roman pizza, which is similar. To pan pizza.
It's similar to focaccia. It's kind of a hybrid of focaccia and this what I call pan pizza the Detroit style. I refer to that category as deep pan pizza as opposed to regular pan pizza, which is in a sheet pan with like a 1-inch lip around the inner wall. Whereas the deep pan pizzas have a taller wall to catch that cheese. Oh. But a deep dish pizza, which is Chicago style, is usually round and has a tall wall, but it's got a totally different crust, and it's more like a casserole, I think, than in terms of categories. So each of these pizzas are still technically pizzas because what is pizza but dough with something on it?
I'm smiling because Peter just revealed his bias. He referred to Chicago pizza as a casserole.
Okay, I know.
Did you catch like, how he suddenly said that?
Ooh, felt the knife just turning. Yes.
And Steve has a real connection to Chicago.
I have to admit, I love Chicago style dish pizza. It's just that it's a different thing. One slice is like a meal.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love it. I just can't eat a whole pie like I can of the other styles.
So can I ask you have this website, pizzaquest.com, in which you just talk about all this stuff all the time and have all these characters.
It's for pizza obsessives, of which there turn out to be many out there. But yes, that website really is a continuation of the first pizza book, American Pie, My Search for the Perfect Pizza. And I got a call a few years after the book came out where I went a lot of places and was looking for the difference between what's the difference between good and great when it comes to pizza, because all pizza is good. If you don't burn it, people are going to eat it. It delivers flavor and as well as any kind of food there is. And yet there are some that separated themselves from the pack. Some of the famous New Haven pizzerias and New York pizzerias and Pizzeria Bianco and Phoenix. What I did was I kind of profiled some of the classic great pizzerias to try to get at the difference between why they were able to separate from these other places, all using the same ingredients, dough and cheese and sauce, and yet some places became destination pizzerias. So that book explored that. And then I get a call from these two guys from LA who are in the television business. They film actually TV commercials for a living, and they had used my book as a tour guide for them going on their own quest for pizzas. And they thought it would make a great TV show, and they asked me if I wanted to partner up with them. And so we created a whole lot of video footage where we filmed with Nancy Silverton in Los Angeles at her Pizzeria Mozza, here in San Francisco at Pizzeria Delfina, with Tony Gemignani at Tony's place. Mm-hmm. And so we got a lot of footage, and we ended up not being able to get it. We were shooting for PBS, but we couldn't get enough funding to get a 13-episode series, but we had enough footage to get a website going. And we cut all the footage into like 5-minute mini webisodes, And we've been running them now for 5-6 years, and it's been a lot of fun. And so we, in other words, it's a way to keep the never-ending search for the perfect pizza alive by switching to a different medium. And the website is where we do it.
Well, we should probably jump into the book. I have 5 pages of notes. This is ridiculous.
Me too.
I told you there are pizza obsessives.
Four pages.
Well, the first chapter is getting started, and you call this tips and tricks, tools and equipment. And it's not rocket science. It's pretty basic stuff, a good scale, some bowl scrapers, a metal dough blade.
So can I add there, because you make the point, if you're going to make pizza, it's not about using cup measures. Yeah. It's about weighing.
Well, I mean, you could do it without weighing. You can just scoop it if you want. But I think that what we're finding, again, why the pizza world has kind of grown so much, and the whole category of pizzas, you know, exploding. Instead of, when I wrote American Pie, there were maybe 20 pizzerias that qualified to be in the book. Now there are hundreds of pizzerias doing great, memorable pizza. And it's because a lot of the pizza operators were informed by what was going on in the artisan bread movement about how to make better quality bread, because they're so related. And a lot of it started with getting more accurate. If you want consistency, weigh things instead of scoop them, because it's going to be the same each day. A pound is a pound the world around. But a scoop of flour can vary depending on how well you pack it down. And if you're measuring water in a beaker and just eyeballing it, it may not be as accurate. So this is just one thing. And a lot of home bakers have made that leap and bought a little $30 digital scale, and it's changed their baking.
So how about listen to the dough? What is that about?
The dough will tell you what it needs. So even if you do
listen to the dough, Luke. Listen to the dough, Luke.
Even if you measure everything correctly with the scale, depending on the brand of flour you use, there could be factors, the weather, the environment, you know, baking in the Denver area, for instance, where you're at altitude and the flour tends to be drier, can be very, it may not turn out. So you, in the end, you can say, I followed the instructions exactly the way he said in the book, and yet the dough didn't come out right, because maybe sometimes circumstances require you to listen to your dough. If the dough needs more water, it tells you by being too stiff and if it's too wet, then you can always add flour. If it's too stiff, you can add water. But you have to at least pay attention, and don't be so locked into a recipe that you forget how to cook. And I think that, you know, that's where when Italians understand that better than anyone. They'd rather just cook and not use a recipe, because they know what to do. And I think we want people to be able to do that as well.
Well, that's what you mentioned. The sound of the crust, the snap sound, is the epiphany of great pizza.
Yeah.
Right. You wrote something else. You were really in the zone here. You wrote, it induces an undeniable and inexpressible state of joy and inner satisfaction. Talk about hyperbole. It is beautiful, actually. So rhapsodic, so, I would
thank
say.
You.
So one of the things, just to make this point, because I think when I first met you, you know, 100 years ago.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Whatever that was. And you talked about pizza. You talked about the importance of the crust, and the crust is what it's about. It's not the topping. I mean, toppings
are
great.
Talking about that. Back when we first met, I was talking about that crust in bread.
Yeah.
The sound of crust was a chapter in my very first bread book. But yeah, and then with the pizza, the same thing. I think that some of the people that I've gone out on these pizza hunts and pizza quests with, they always start by saying, you know, for me, a pizza is like 80 to 90% about the crust and only 10 to 20% about the toppings. And there's other people who say, no, it's got to be the sauce or it's got to be good cheese. But my feeling is that if you have an average crust, just an average pizza crust, because you didn't do some of the things that we talk about in the book, and it's just a crust, and you can have the most expensive, tastiest ingredients on top, the best that pizza can be is just interesting. Mm. But if you have a great crust that has that snap and that creamy quality and all that, you can put just a little sauce and cheese or nothing on it. And there's some places in Rome that just do put a little oil on it, and that's it. And it's memorable, because that's where the memorable quality lives, is in the crust. That's my feeling. And the toppings are almost like a bonus.
Next two chapters are ingredients and leavening. So the ingredients, you work with 3 basic types of flour, don't you? In the unbleached, whole wheat. And then you sprouted wheat.
Well, sprouted is one new option, sprouted flour, which is a whole grain flour. We have 3 master doughs. One master dough is the classic white dough, which is white flour, bread flour. I use unbleached bread flour. Then there's a country dough in which you can use any amount of whole grain in place of some of the white flour. I recommend 20% whole wheat and or to up to 25% and all the rest bread flour. Otherwise, it starts to become more like a whole wheat dough, which is okay also. And in the book, we say, look, if you really want to go all in on the whole grain, you can go up to 100%, and that's fine too. But mm-hmm. but in terms of what we've seen in response, people love the white dough the most. They love with a little country. We give it the country name, country dough, mm-hmm. with a little whole wheat, because it kind of has this earth tones from the whole wheat or rye flour. And then there's the sourdough crust. And that's another big frontier now in the pizza world, is that more and more pizzerias are going to natural leavening and sourdough.
You have such a great description of the whole sourdough technique and how to make your own, which I've never seen. I don't think anybody's ever explained. How do you make your own sourdough? How do you grab those wild yeasts and turn them into something?
Let's take a break, because that's five pages.
More than that.
Well, while we're on break, I'll try to form an answer to that one.
Yeah, page 36 to 41 is the whole sourdough explanation. Peter Reinhardt is in the KSRO kitchen today. This is KSRO.
Join the switch to crystal clear KSRO-FM, 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor, 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
Come to the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, voted best farmers market in Sonoma County. You'll enjoy exploring all they have to offer. This summer's market is exploding with all its local bounty. Berries and fruit, summer squash, onions, and vine-ripe tomatoes. Get your vegetable starts and advice from Master Gardeners at the Saturday Market. When it comes to choosing meat, discover the quality of local beef, pork, lamb, and freshly made sausages. Award-winning vendors and artisans offering everything from baked goods, olive oil, fermented foods, spices, and chocolate to hand-painted silk pieces. Enjoy a fruit smoothie, breakfast, or lunch from the variety of food vendors. Santa Rosa's Original Certified Farmers Market at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. Open year-round, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1. Thank you, Sonoma County, for voting them number one. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Sonoma County is rich with creative people. Being an artist or a budding entrepreneur takes creativity and hard work. It often requires expensive technology and education to finish your projects, and that's where we come in. I'm Zach Block with Jared Lyons, and we're here with North Bay Makers at 180 Studios.
We provide public access to over 16,000 square feet of professional equipment with a dynamic work environment. 180 Studios is a makerspace in Santa Rosa that helps inventors, artists, engineers, dreamers, and entrepreneurs achieve their goals by using our tools, equipment, and education resources. With a digital media lab, electronics and robotics, welding, woodworking, designing, and a machine shop, 180 Studios is available for you to create.
Our events are a great way to engage, so don't miss the next workshop or Meet the Maker Mixer.
Visit 180studios.org to learn more. 180 Studios at 150 Todd Road in Santa Rosa. Online at 180studios.org.
Get in shape by joining the Super Slow Movement at Inform Fitness Personal Training. Designed to work for busy people who desire optimal results, Inform Fitness Roanoke Park is a revolutionary personal training studio that caters to your valuable time and fitness goals. Increase your energy levels, muscle tone, and lean muscle mass with their innovative 20-minute once or twice per week workout.
I had injuries and they worked with me at my own pace to get results.
Summer special, buy 2 months, get the third free. No contracts. Inform Fitness Roanoke Park. Call 707-385-9860.
You're a small business owner, and there's nothing small about what you do. That's why Dell Small Business Technology Advisors give you trusted advice, one-on-one partnership, and tailored tech solutions, like computers with Intel Core processors, servers, storage, networking, plus thousands of top-brand electronics, accessories, and software. No matter your technology needs, Dell is here to help your small business do big things. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
With Sonoma County's most accurate, most dependable forecast, here's Daniel Trucios on the KSRO Weather Watch.
Scattered clouds throughout the weekend today included, high 78, 63 along the coast, mostly clear skies tonight, low 52, 50 on the shores. A few more clouds for tomorrow at 80 degrees, 65 in Bodega Bay. Monday, sunny skies at 86, 70 on the coastline. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5. KSRO.
The moon of Kentucky keep on shining. Shine on the one that's gone, been untrue. The moon of Kentucky keep on shining. Shine on the one that's gone and left in blue.
In the KSRO Pizzeria today, it's Peter Reinhardt celebrating the release of his new book, Perfect Pan Pizza. Chef John Ash and Steve Garner in the kitchen. Oh, I wanted to ask you, this is a pepperoni pizza on the front.
On the cover,
now,
yes.
I referred to something called cupping pizza.
Yes.
Cupping pepperoni. Yes. What is that?
You can find pepperoni is an incredible, like, salami or salumi, as they would say in Italy, if you want to sort of fuss it up a little bit. But it's there is no pepperoni in Italy. It's really an American invention. They're great other spicy salamis, like soppressata and things like that. But pepperoni is a salami made with a lot of paprika and spice, and it's become clearly the most popular topping in pizzas in this country and probably in many other countries except Italy. And typically, if you buy it in a stick and you slice it yourself, it's usually you slice so thick that it won't curl when it bakes. But when you buy pre-sliced pepperoni in those, and there's usually about an inch and a half in diameter, small circles, they're so thin that when they bake on top of the pizza and the oils start to render and melt up and they get that little crispy edge, they actually cup. They form a cup that the oil kind of sits in the middle of the pepperoni. And that's what everyone thinks.
It's charred edges. It looks
so greasy because it's sitting in there. Mm. But it actually tastes really, really good.
So one of
but it is a great – I think the American invention of pepperoni is getting – it gets unfair flack from mainly Italophiles. Yeah, purists. Yeah. Because there's something really wonderful. And there are a lot of artisan salami makers now making beautiful – upscaled pepperoni as well.
So would you talk about, because this was just an amazing thing for me, the stretch and fold technique, because I think there's this whole idea, you got to knead it know, for 10, 20 minutes.
And then also include a little about dimpling.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Another term in the book, yeah. Sometimes you have to coin your own phrases, you know. So what I've learned in my years as an artisan baker is that one of the trends right now is when you first learn how to make bread, you want to make sure you mix it long enough and develop the gluten in the flour. It turns out that it doesn't take that much work or time to develop the gluten. It can take 5 to 7 minutes, but you don't have to be mixing the whole time to do that. And the downside of mixing for long times, even though the upside is you get a very strong kind of organized gluten pattern and the gluten's very nicely developed, is that the holes that the bread will form when it rises will be very even because the dough can be almost over-organized. The little weave of gluten threads forms a very tight tapestry. In the artisan movement, a lot of times now the bakers will mix only as long as it takes to get the gluten to develop and slightly organize so that it creates larger air pockets when the dough rises and the gas kind of pushes out. And so with the same thing with the pizza, and the downside of long mixing is that you can work a lot of oxygen into the dough, which oxidizes your dough and bleaches out. It's actually a natural bleaching process. The beta carotene pigments that provide that ivory color and also an aroma, a very subtle aroma. It's hard. A lot of people have tried doing a comparison between bleached flour and unbleached flour, and some people say, I don't taste the difference. But if you have them side by side, you do get less aroma from bleached flour. Bleached flour is great for biscuits, by the way, but it's better to use unbleached flour for bread and pizza doughs. So all that are factors, and it's really, again, just these subtle little tweaks and differences that can differentiate a good pizza from a great pizza. And so by mixing the dough only as long as it takes to kind of bring it together.
You talk about shaggy.
Yeah, at that stage, when all the flour has been hydrated with water, the dough looks coarse and shaggy like a rug, like a shag rug. And then if you put a little oil on the work surface and kind of spread it out, you can move the dough so it won't stick to the counter on there and stretch it from all four sides to the center and flip it over. And the dough, just with that one little action, it's as if you were mixing for another minute or two. The dough gets smooth. And each time you do something like that, the dough gets smoother and the gluten has a chance to get organized but not oxidized. And these, again, very subtle differences. You could just stick with your old method and mix for 7 or 8 minutes and let it come together. But this is just a new technique. And I kind of love the way the participation that people have when they do that, they actually get to see the dough transformed from these various stages, and it's very dramatic. Each time you do a stretch and fold, the dough gets stronger, and when you tap on it, it sounds like a basketball bouncing. It gets this bouncy quality.
And how did your students comprehend the dimpling lesson?
So the other word was dimpling. So the dimpling is when you put the dough in the pan, so you've got this nicely oiled pan, but after you mix the dough, if you take the dough and put it right in the pan, it hasn't had a chance to rise or gas up or anything else, and it's very tight because the gluten is stressed from being handled a lot. So you have to let the dough relax in order for it to spread. So typically what I would do is either put the dough in a bowl and put it in the refrigerator overnight to rise slowly, or put it right in the pan, greased and everything, and just press it down with my fingertips and put little dimples in it to spread it as far as it'll go. It will only spread maybe and cover the pan about halfway or two-thirds of the way. It won't cover the whole pan because it's too tense. Then I cover it with plastic wrap or put it in a bag and put it away for the night. Put it in the refrigerator, and the dough will continue to slowly ferment as it cools down, and the gluten will relax. And the next morning or next day when I'm ready to start to press it into the pan, I'll remove the plastic and start pressing my fingers into the surface and putting dimples in. And each time I do that, the dough will spread a little bit more. I'll let it rest for maybe 20 minutes, and I'll do it again. And I'll let it rest a third time for 20 minutes. By the end of the third dimpling, the dough will have relaxed enough to fill all four corners of
the pan. So one of the things that you have such wonderful photographs in the book, and you have that pictured, because I think most people wouldn't. It's like, oh, no, I it's not out to the edge of the pan.
Yeah.
You just have to wait.
Yeah. Just let it relax and wait on it. So the first hour, when you put the dough in the, or when you start the dimpling process, the first hour is just to get the dough to fill the pan. And don't force it. Don't try to press it with the heels of your hand because it'll rip and tear. Just let it go as far as it will let you go. Listen to your dough. And then let it relax for about 20 minutes and do it again. And by the third or fourth dimpling, it will fill the pan. And even if it doesn't go into all four corners, as it rises, it will fill all four corners. And then, depending on which kind of pizza you're making, anywhere from 2 to 4 hours of rising at room temperature. For the Detroit style or the deep pan pizzas, I usually say 4 hours. And for a focaccia, about 2.5 to 3 hours till it comes to the top of the pan.
When he's talking pizza, he's a runaway freight train. It's Peter Reinhardt. His new book is Perfect Pan Pizza. And we've just scratched the surface of this book, John. We're down to the last 10 or 12 minutes.
We have so many questions.
We have a lot of questions. And so we'll take a quick break.
Can I come back another time?
Oh, yeah.
Please do.
Let's go 2 hours.
Peter Reinhardt joining Chef John Ash and Steve Garner in the KSRO kitchen. At the end of the hour, we will be giving away a signed copy of Peter's brand new book. This is KSRO.
Sonoma County's FM News Talk at 103.5 and 94.5. KSRO, depend on it.
DJ Sash and Glass is a full-service windows and glass family business that has served Sonoma County since 1960. DJ's makes it easy to replace your old, drafty, hard-to-open windows. Improve the look and value of your home with reliable, energy-efficient Milgard replacement windows. You don't have to worry about disposing of your old windows. DJ Sash and Glass makes it easy to get your home improvement project done. And shower doors and enclosures are just a phone call away at DJ Sash and Glass. DJ specializes in custom shower doors and custom mirrors for your new or replacement bathroom project. Call DJ Sash and Glass today for windows and your shower door replacement. Add a touch of class to your glass with DJ Sash and Glass. 2985 Wilgin Court. Call 546-7344 and online at djsglass.com.
The Center for Spiritual Living in Santa Rosa invites you to an evening with Anthony Ray Hinton. Released in 2015 after spending 30 years on Alabama's death row for a crime he did not commit, Hinton has written a book about his experience called The Sun Does Shine, How I Found Life and Freedom on Death Row. On Oprah's book club list, it's an extraordinary testament to the power of hope and forgiveness through the darkest times. His story exemplifies how you can take away a man's freedom, but you can't take away his imagination, humor, or joy. On Friday, August 23rd at 7 p.m., you'll have an opportunity to hear from him during a presentation, Q&A session, and book signing at the Center for Spiritual Living in Santa Rosa. For more information and tickets, including a book signing, go online to cslsr.org. That's cslsr.org.
And now, the worst commercial ever.
As a real-life caterer, my recipe for success is a heaping helping of commercial auto and business insurance through Progressive. They helped whip up a customized insurance solution that keeps my business cooking.
That barrage of bad wordplay was most unpleasant. Whereas commercial auto and business insurance through Progressive is anything but. Visit ProgressiveCommercial.com to quote today. Insurance provided in service by Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. It's affiliated and third-party insurer.
Hi, I'm Vanessa with PG&E. A little preparation will make your family safer in an emergency. A week's worth of food and water, radio, flashlight, batteries, and a first aid kit is a good start. To be prepared and learn more, visit pge.com/safety.
Graton Resort and Casino is now hiring.
It's fun, it's exciting, and it's like going to a concert. We always want to promote from within.
Apply today at GratonResortCasino.com.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play up there with those stars. Let me see what life is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand.
In the Chaos Auto Pizzeria, it's Peter Reinhardt, Brother Peter Reinhardt. Many, many appearances on the Chaos Arnold Good Food Hour with Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner, over the last 30 years. And we're thrilled to have him back celebrating the release of his new book, Perfect Pan Pizza. What are the other great people in the world of pizza saying about Peter's book, John?
Well, it's David and Joachim. Is that
David Joachim, yeah.
Joachim, who's quite famous for his pizza and all this. So can I read you this little thing?
Sure.
You didn't do anything.
I didn't write this one. Okay. This was just one of those blurbs.
So Peter Reinhardt is the Buddha of bread. More alliteration, which is great. He is one with the dough. And that makes him the pundit of pizza.
Ooh.
Whoa, it just goes on and on, too.
Well, we've made it to chapter two during our chat. And that's sauces and the specialty toppings. And there's only three big ones, the crushed tomato and the all-purpose marinara.
So can we talk just before that, you talk about sourdough.
Yeah.
And is that your favorite dough?
I think sourdough is kind of like that's the ultimate, challenge for any baker is to be able, it's like working without a net because you're working at the mercy of the natural leaven, which is yeast and bacteria captured into your dough that will grow just like commercial yeast will do it, but it's much less controllable than using yeast powder. And so more and more bakers have moved to that because the other advantages is that it takes longer. Sourdough is a longer, slower process, but it's more digestible. A lot of studies are showing.
I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah.
And even for people who have not celiacs, but people who have kind of sensitivities
yeah,
is
exactly
the word that they can deal with.
Some can. We can't promise it, but we're finding that, and the longer the fermentation goes, there's some bread guys who are making like 5-day fermentation breads. They're finding that more and more gluten sensitive people, that's the only bread they can eat. And and so there's something about there's a breakdown that the wild organisms kind of pre-digest a lot of the offending aspects, like the gliadin, which is a part of the gluten protein. It can pre-digest that to some extent so your body doesn't have to work as hard. Plus you get all this wonderful complex flavor from the acidity of the acids that are produced by the bacteria and the alcohol esters produced by the yeast. I mean, those things just are all go into the bread. Bread is just like solid beer, and beer is like liquid bread. It's a very similar process, and I think that's one of the reasons why people are fascinated with bread, because it does go through these so many transformations in its journey from wheat growing in the ground to the bite on your table. From wheat to eat is the journey, and I think people love participating in the stages of that.
So is it difficult to make your own sourdough? I mean,
not really.
Because you have a great discussion in there. I don't think I've ever seen it laid out the way you laid it out.
Great. Well, you know, in every book now that I do, I always have to include a sourdough chapter, and I can't assume that people have my other books. So I try to each time refine the way I explain it, because it's not hard to do, but it's intimidating if you haven't done it. Mm-hmm. And so the best thing is just follow these steps as they're laid out and give yourself time. And you can't. And I can't promise. For instance, here in Sonoma County, if you make a sourdough starter here, you can have it bubbling away in a very short amount of time because there's so much wild yeast in the air. But if you try to make that same sourdough starter where I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, it takes about twice as long for it to come to life because it doesn't have all those wild organisms as readily available. So, but in the end, you will get there. You know,
we should probably just touch on there's the deep down Detroit style pizza chapter 3, the classic red stripe, and then we get into the bacon and eggs pizza and a whole lot of different and you know, back when you were a shoeless hippie in Boston, Peter, you came up with something called kundalini cauliflower.
I know, I love that.
So what is that?
it's cauliflower that's been marinated in a garlicky vinaigrette. That and that's where the kundalini comes in, because garlic is a great energizer if you do yoga. And then when you bake it, you know, in the pizza, it gets a nice char to it, and it just softens, and it's just wonderful. Nice. And so we used to make in my hippie restaurant back in 1971. That was one of the very first dishes I ever invented. Was this marinated cauliflower that we baked. And maybe tossed a little breadcrumbs on it, and it was delicious. So I just adapted that. In fact, if I could say something about the origin of a lot of the recipes in the book, many of them go back to associations I have with my favorite sandwiches. And I think that because a sandwich and a pizza are so related, that that I, for inspiration, I would think, okay, like I grew up in Philadelphia, cheesesteaks obviously are a big thing, hoagies are a big thing, roast pork sandwiches are a big thing, and that's just Philadelphia alone. And then there's other, you know, everyone loves a BLT. Well, all of those things can be adapted to a pizza, because a pizza is just dough with something on it, and a sandwich is just dough with something in it. And so what I tried to do was find a way to kind of translate a great sandwich with those wonderful flavor profiles that has and the textures, and turn it into a pizza. So there's a lot of really cool pizzas.
So can
that
I
are
say something?
Based.
Because you're so precise about all of the stuff, and then you go off on these recipes, spaghetti and meatballs.
Hey, that's not even my idea. There are pizzerias serving spaghetti and meatball pizzas, and if you notice from the picture, it really works. It does. You know, and I gave a little recipe for homemade meatballs if you don't want to buy the frozen ones. Yeah. That's very simple to make, and they're small little meatballs, and it's beautiful.
And you mentioned Philly cheesesteak. If we ever find ourselves in the Philadelphia area, where do we go for the best Philly cheesesteak?
I have a talk that I gave that's on the internet that anyone can watch. If you just Google Peter Reinhardt at Creative Mornings, that's a national movement where they have Friday meetings. And I gave a talk called My Never-Ending Search for the Perfect Pizza. And it starts with a cheesesteak. And it ends with a cheesesteak, because it's integral to the story. There's a place where I used to go as a kid that made the best pizza when I was a kid, but doesn't make the best pizza now, because the son who took over from the father really didn't like pizza, but he loved making cheesesteaks. And he became the Chris Bianco and the Tony Gemignani of cheesesteak sandwiches. And it's called Mama's Pizzeria on Belmont Avenue, just on the edge of Philadelphia and Bala-Cynwyd, a little suburb of Philadelphia. Mama's Pizzeria. But don't get the pizza. Get the cheesesteak. And it has been acknowledged by David Rosengarten and other food writers as the best cheesesteak in Philadelphia. Don't go to the famous,
in the Reading Terminal
cheesesteaks places down in South Philly. Those are where they use Cheese Whiz on the top. Don't go there. Go to Mama's. It's a life-changing cheesesteak sandwich.
So can you talk about grandma-style pizza?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's a section in the
book. That's right. And grandma-style is basically making a pizza in a square pan, in a regular sheet pan. But the difference between a grandma pizza and a Sicilian pizza is that typically when you see Sicilian style pizzas, which are also pizzas baked in a pan, that are, they're usually baked twice. The crust is raises and they bake it once with maybe a little sauce, and then they let it cool off. And when you order your pizza, then they top it and throw it back in the oven. And that way you can get the pizza in just a few minutes instead of waiting 15 minutes for it to bake. Whereas if you go to Umberto's Pizzeria in Queens or some of the other places that have now since copied them and offer the grandma pizza, Umberto's gets credit for kind of being the origin source, they say it's going to be 15 to 20 minutes because it's one bake. They make the whole pizza, they let it rise a little bit in the pan, the dough, and then they top it. Usually they put slices of cheese on first, thinly sliced mozzarella, that cover the surface to protect the dough from the sauce. Otherwise, it would soak in and you get kind of a soggy top crust. And then they put the sauce on top of that and then anything else they want to put on it. And it's a different way of getting there. And it's wonderful in its own right. But it's just, again, just a pizza baked in a pan, but one bake instead of two.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, you mentioned Sicilian pizza. It's not from Sicily.
That's right. Yeah, I know. As so often happens when things come over, jump the pond from Italy, you know, it's the person who makes it in the United States gets to name it, you know, and probably some people, maybe they were from Sicily, maybe they were from Naples, but they made this pan pizza.
They emigrated
and they
to
didn't
Brooklyn,
want to call it a Queens. Naples pizza, so they said, well, what else can we call it? Oh, yeah, we'll call it a Sicilian pizza. If you go to Sicily, the pizzas there are mostly Neapolitan style, but they do have a style of pizza called sfingiuni, which is, it's a thicker crusted, like a focaccia. That's their version of pizza. But really, if you go to Sicily and ask for Sicilian pizza, they're going to throw you out.
Yeah.
You
know,
or
worse.
So can I ask you something about cheese? There, a quick question about cheese. Two things.
Yes.
Number one, that idea of putting half the cheese...
Thank you. That way, I'm glad we get to talk about that.
In the dough. And the other is your love of Wisconsin cheese.
Well, I actually am. I think Wisconsin makes some pretty amazing cheeses, as does Vermont and California.
Yeah.
But so the Detroit-style pizza, the official cheese for that is a Wisconsin brick cheese. It's called brick cheese, which turns out is very similar. It's like a firmer version of Munster cheese. I found that out through... The deep research I did into this book, you know, because I couldn't find any brick cheese. So I called the brick cheese maker and I said, you know, where can I get this cheese? He says, it's really hard to find because the Detroit people kind of buy it all up. But we also make Munster and it's the exact same process, just, you know, slightly different, similar but different. So that solved all the problems. But what was the first part of
that? Well, the first one was half the cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So this, I think, is the biggest contribution.
Yeah.
Of the book
that Peter's made to civilization.
This is my legacy technique. Okay?
It'll be on your gravestone.
he created the embedded cheese technique. You know? And what we did is when I kind of came up with this, I was doing a consulting project in Texas at a restaurant that wanted to have a Detroit pizza on the menu, and they wanted it to be as good as this famous place in Telluride, Colorado, that made, they thought, the best Detroit-style pizza. The guy was from Detroit. He was a ski bum who had to support himself, so he opened a little pizzeria, and he made Detroit pizza, and it's fabulous stuff. It's called the Brown Dog Pizza. And so it was, and it's great. But we were trying to make this in a restaurant that didn't have, you know, this, it wasn't set up for pizza. It was just a restaurant. And during the process of figuring it out, we decided as an experiment to put half of the cheese, and the cheese is cut in cubes. It's not cut in, it's not shredded, because the pizza takes 15 minutes to bake, so you need to give the cheese time to melt without burning. So we cut them in little cubes, and we decided to put half the cheese on before the dough rose. After it filled the pan, we put half the cheese over the surface, then let it rise for 4 hours so that it rose all the way to close to the top of the pan. And then when we were ready to bake it, we put the other half of the cheese on, including some right around the perimeter of the pan so that it would melt down the side. And so it was basically double cheesed. Mm-hmm. That was a breakthrough. When we tasted that, we said, we have just beat that pizza from Telluride, mm-hmm. because the creamy quality of the crumb of the internal part of the dough, it was almost like custard. It was a custard like quality or creamy.
So does the dough actually covers that first addition of cheese?
The cheese that's rising on the dough rises around it,
so
it's embedded in the dough.
Yeah.
So that when you bite into it, you're getting the cheese on top, you're getting the crispy frico on the edge, you're getting the crunchy bottom, and you're getting this creamy custardy, Whoa. Cheesy
Did
dough.
You bring one of those?
I just happen to have one in my back pocket here.
Why don't you choose your favorite number between 1 and 15? And you know, it comes to mind, you've written 12 books. What about caller number 12? No, but it's your choice. Don't let me influence
I'm
you.
I'm feeling... A 12.
Really? Are you sure? Is that okay with you?
You've planted an idea.
Sorry, poor producer.
Caller number 12 at 636-1350 will win this book I'm holding in my hands, Perfect Pan Pizza, written by the irrepressible Peter Reinhardt. Well, I don't know about you, but I need pizza right now for lunch.
I do.
Okay? Thanks, John. Yeah. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
We'll talk again next week.